Call the regular finance committee meeting of August 4th, 2020 to order at 10 o'clock a.m. Item two, comments from the public. Any comments from any folks out there? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item three, Rancho Murrieta Golf Course and Rancho Murrieta Properties LLC, security and drink.
This is a very complex issue. We have spent a lot of time trying to develop timelines of events going back to February of 1998. And so I have a view of their request, and I'm meeting with both of the requesters for the tax appeal later this week to go over what I have found and to see if there's any other documents out there that they're aware of that can help for a refund or not. Right now, I'm not sure that I have all the documents. So I've scheduled meetings with Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Martell individually to go through the what we have and what they may have that I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
I hope you have this ready. Once I'm completed with my summary, taking on any information from the two gentlemen, I will review the whole packet with our attorney, Dick Shanahan.
All right. Is there any more we need to do with this one at this particular time?
No, I guess I should say they did have a request to also modify or review the sewer charges for the water and sewer charges for the country club. I'm treating that as a separate response. I'm not going to confuse the two because they're both pretty complicated. And so we're beginning the work on analyzing the request for the sewer refund.
Okay.
That's it.
So we'll, I'm assuming, put this back on the agenda for the next meeting then, right?
Correct. Hopefully, okay. we'll have a resolution or a formal letter from me to the parties that what our decision is.
Okay. And then just one thing going forward is, in that the language that's critical to this, that's in the settlement agreement, we would then just make sure we run that past Mr. Shanahan and get his input on that.
Correct.
Cool. Okay. Any more to do with this one?
Not unless anybody has other questions.
Tim, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. We'll just need to see it, and maybe we get it by the board meeting, and we can address it on the formal response.
Four, Tom, again, security fee discussion.
The security fee discussion is we talked about going out this year and solicit some bids on analyzing our security. Historically, how we got to where we are today, in that the tax we collect does not meet the requirements of the demands of what we currently have in our security department. So in 2010, at great length, when the airport added some cameras and tried to get their fees reduced, and there was a lot of discussion about the fact the tax is what it is, and you know, a good example is in your tax share.
Tom, you're cutting out. Do you want to come in here and talk on my line?
I'm cutting out.
Yeah, you're cutting out on me too, Tom.
Okay, me too.
I don't know. I'll go into Amelia's office. Give me just a sec.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt everybody. I'm trying to take notes on what he's saying, and I'm like, oh, I hope that wasn't.
Okay, wearing a mask. Where did you guys, where did I get lost?
Talk about the airport.
Why don't go back, Tom. Why don't you?
Now you're cutting out, John.
Huh. Do we have some kind of an overriding internet problem?
It looks like the internet here at the district office is unstable right now. So if somebody's missing something, just ask us.
Yeah, I'm, who's, are you still there, Amelia?
Yes, we're here.
Okay. All right, let's try it. Let's try it again with item four. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. There's a lot of discussion about how we fund security and the fact that approved by the voters in January 8th is not keeping up the cost to run the security department.
I'm losing you again here. Is it everyone?
I don't know. I will.
No, I can't. He's really muffled. I can't hear him.
Let's call in.
It's the static on the line.
I can't
too.
Either. This
we're gonna call in. And do you have the agenda? Do you have the number, Tom? It's on the top of the agenda.
Yeah. Bear with me for a second, please.
Okay.
I see that Dee has her hand up on. Would you like to call her now while we're waiting for Tom to get on?
So there's a question out there. Is that what you're saying, Amelia?
Yes, Dee has her hand up. Would you like to hear her question?
Sure, if it's for us and not for Tom. Okay.
Go ahead, Dee. Hi, Dee. We can't hear you.
Did you see my number?
Yeah, thanks. I can hear you now. Oh, and Baby got off the call too.
Hello? Okay, this is Tom. I'm back on the call.
Okay. And Amelia, would you make sure everybody's muted out? I'm not sure if that's getting in the way or not.
Unmute everybody and Dee.
No, mute everyone.
Yes, I will mute everyone except Tom and I'll unmute everybody. Mute all.
Okay, Tom, are you there?
I have to unmute him. Tom, can you hear us?
Okay, I'm unmuted now.
Perfect.
Okay, let's try it again, Tom.
Okay, so we're talking about security tax. This year, the security tax is being the security by around $480,000 of local property taxes. So there's a lot of discussion around what can we do with the security fees. What we've done to date is we're trying to streamline our operations and excessive or maybe good to have or nice to have. So we're trying to streamline our staffing and we're taking a look at the historical aspect of where the fees for security, the taxes, started becoming short of funding to meet the requirements. So in the budget this year, we budgeted to have another fee assessment done, or a security fee assessment done by an outside firm. And we're putting together the RFP for that, you know, in the next, is kind of a model we can follow. But the main issue, or one of the main issues, is that people are, different factions of the community are trying to say they don't need to pay the same amount that they're paying in security fees. And what we found was, in 2010, the discussion occurred back then when the airport requested a waiver or a reduction in their security fees. And the end result of that discussion is, we brought in the people who put together the Measure J back in 97, 98, and they clearly outlined the fact that it's a tax, it's a special tax, and whether you utilize security or not, the tax is what it was voted upon in Measure J, and those rates need to remain the same. To fix it, we probably have to go back to the voters. And John and I, in general, this has been discussed over the past couple of years. So the bottom line with this is, we're moving forward and trying to analyze how we got to where we are today. So when we do sit down with an outside consultant who can do this as you know, in a professional manner, we can have as much information available at the time. This is, it's complicated, like everything else.
One of the things that came to light when we started crunching these numbers last month was the real dollar amount that launched this project and took the security issue off the rail, the admin overhead that resulted from the work we did with the consultants. Traditionally, going back in excess of 20 and 21.5% of an admin allocation that was plopped off onto security. When we took that up to the 31.5, I believe is the number, that's $1,000+ allocation that had to be put in there from property taxes. But if you were to do a model, and we worked with this a little bit in a 3-hour meeting that we had, that allocation and plug it back over the last 10 years, what it essentially tells you to begin with is that we've been off the rails for a long time in the difference between what we collect in security tax revenue and what it's actually costing us to run. And a tape of a meeting that occurred in 2011, where the Finance Committee met with the actual Measure J and Measure K initiatives, and essentially some of the concerns of the commercial side and the country club side now with what they pay and what they receive correspond back to actually what the airport did. So we don't have a new problem here, but we have a problem where I think now that we've really started to plug this data in, we can look at exactly what happened and exactly what we need to fix. The part of it that's missing here is, once again, whether we do a referendum or not, we have to come up with some kind of a baseline going forward, because we're going to be stuck with the same type of arrangement where we have to fix a baseline number and then we have to attach. Otherwise, we're just going to wind up 10 years from now in exactly the same place we are now. So consistent with that, what I keep wrestling with is when like and how we share both contractual arrangements and enforcement functions with the RMA, for example, how do we find out overall as a community we never really answered in that last security analysis that we did what the opinion of the status quo is. I don't know, if you ask 10 people, you get 10 different opinions on what security ought to do and what it ought to look like. So I think there's two parts of this. The easier part being identifying from a financial standpoint what we need to do to fix it. And on the other hand, what is it supposed to look like when we're done? And in there somewhere is something that we craft that has to go into a form of a referendum, because the only way we can really adjust, and this came out of that tape even from 2011, the only way we can really adjust any of these costs and rates is to do it with a vote of the community.
And to add, this is Tom Hennigan, to add to that, the 2% max that we can increase the tax each year, it does not keep up with the cost of insurance, the cost of our risk management pool, the cost of our tenure increases here every year. They, per the union contract, they get 5% increases if they perform as expected. So the 2% was destined to not keep up with the need from the beginning. It's just over the years, it was kind of shielded from vision through how we did the budget. Once we did a proper cost allocation plan, which is what we needed to do, it became clear that security is costing a lot more than the taxes provide.
Questions, comments, concerns?
Hi, John. This is Tim. Yeah, I think a couple of things. You're right that it needs to be broken down into the service delivery model, and security is going to be, the committee is going to be looking at that. I think the finance then is where we're sitting right here. And it's really a twofold, like you said. This is an ongoing issue. But it's kind of at the forefront now. So I think, and what I've talked to Tom about, from once we get our understanding of, you know, when it started, how it started, and kind of the thought process of prior boards, once we get a little bit more background on the finance side of it, then we can start having the town hall meetings on purely, is our service delivery model acceptable or not? And that'll gauge a few things on where we go or how we're going to do those types of things. So I like the course of action. We're trying to get all the history of how we got here, because I think it's going to be extremely important for people to understand, you know, why did RMA want to stop paying CSD? Why did CSD want to take it on completely? Once we get all that information, I think as a board, we're going to have to sit down, John, and just go, okay, how do we move this forward for the town hall meetings, and not so much present options, but hear the feedback both on the finance side as well as the service delivery model. And then we've got some decisions to make.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things we found out from that 2011 meeting, that the actual consultant attended that had written Measure J and K was number one going forward, and Paul mentioned it in the improvements meeting about having to address the same issue with regard to drainage. There seemed to be some leeway in how we could approach that increase, and it may not have to go to a referendum, at least if nothing's changed since that guy made the presentation to be adamant that anything we did with regard to security was going to have to take place on a referendum, and we would have to design that we were left with what we had should the referendum fail. Because no matter what we do or what we present, ultimately we're going to need 66% of the people who vote in that election to approve anything we put out there.
I know I've had dialogue with Tom because we do need to look at the sewer side of the house, the drainage that potentially aren't funding themselves. So again, they're separate. That we're now starting to peel away the layers.
So I think then what we probably ought to talk about at a board level is preliminarily is a schedule on how we want to get to a point where this ends in a referendum or whatever we need to fix it. There's a lot of parts and pieces of it, but I think we really should be working to a schedule on this. Otherwise, we could be out a couple of years, and I'd really like to try and prevent that if that's possible.
I agree with you. I know it's a multi-fiscal year process. I think we all realize that. I think by time we get all the data that we can, and especially the history of it, I would think that's when we need to start putting some real hard timelines and getting that feedback. Now, I don't want to push anything off, but at the end of the day, I know staff is very well aware of the intent of the board. So I don't disagree with you. I don't know if it has to be on this board meeting because we may not just have enough data or history. But I think, Tom, maybe what we do is because we're doing it with a couple other drainage, that maybe we just come up with that generic format that we're going to use. And we start plugging in the timelines from that standpoint.
Well, I think that we can put a memo together for the board by the next meeting. Come up with a proposed timeline for when we release the RFP, some of the scope, and when we come back to the board with responses or recommendations for moving forward. Eventually, we'll have a report. I think we can have that memo by the next meeting, by the next board meeting.
Perfect. Then, we'll get it on the agenda because if it has to be an action item, just in case. So yes, perfect.
And then this is Amelia. Dee, okay. Her hand up. Dee, can you speak? Can we hear you? You're not muted.
Amelia, is she calling online?
I can see Dee. So she must be coming over on a computer. It's not a phone number. And she said in her last chat, and then she raised her hand and she chats with me. Can you bring my question to the board? Well, can you type in your question, Dee? I'm so sorry, we're having technological difficulties.
Yeah, this meeting as a whole is going in and out for almost everybody.
Yeah.
So, did you get anything there, Amelia?
Oh, yes, sir, I did. Can you bring my question to the board? What do you think about the cost of security?
I'm sorry, say it again, because I lost that part.
Is there anything we can do about the administrative cost of security?
Well, I think the short answer is we already did. We juiced it up to where it really ought to be. I mean, we have an inherent cost of admin that we spread over four entities. The impact of that as a percentage is really related to the whole admin budget. So at least in the current scenario, if you were to explore other models, and we have thrown around a variety of ideas, and that's simply what they are, is ideas. For example, segregating security south of the Jackson Highway, for example, and costing out what it would be to apply a security model to that particular side of the highway that has a very much different need for security than the two entities inside the gates, the north and the south, developed and undeveloped properties. And again, I'm just saying what we've discussed as ideas. I don't want anybody running off saying we're going to do this tomorrow, because that's not where we're going. But if you were to change these models around, it could change the admin allocation, and by reducing the admin allocation for security, you might be able to actually reduce the overall cost of security and narrow that gap that we currently have. But, you know, again, we don't have any sophisticated data to look at this point. Like Tim said, it's a process, and it's not something we're going to do, you know, in the next couple of months. It's going to take a while.
Well, and this is Tom Hennig, and to address Dee's question again, you know, the admin budget is what it is, and it needs to be distributed 100% to the other five entities, being solid waste, security, drainage, water, and sewer. Lowering the cost would just entail decreasing the amount we spend on administration, which would be in the form of either staffing or, you know, what we do as a whole. We could go out and try to get a cheaper quote for our liability and risk carrier. We currently use GSRMA. There are other risk carriers out there. We could do all these little cost-saving plans, and the result would be less administration, more work to be done by the people who are left behind. So we are doing everything we can to be frugal with the budget, but to a point, we have to get this work done. And the cycle of activity at the district is such that there's a lot going on all the time. And every month we revisit these committee meetings and we take initiative forwards. We do things like research requests for tax for refunds, initiatives like putting together the packet for the security analysis. So it's a budget, and reducing it can be done, but at some point you start losing your capability to administer the district's requirements. I hope that answers your question.
I'm asking.
The other part of that, when you segregate out the admin costs from all the other costs, when you get into the other cost, you're dealing with a number that's in excess of 90% that strictly allocates to labor. I mean, it is a extremely labor intensive activity. And it in itself explains why we have run away from the 2% okay, over the period of 2020. So going forward, I think that, you know, we have to start to look at what realistic costs of labor are going to be going forward before we take a baseline number and start applying some annual increase to it. If we don't do that, we're just going to wind up in the same place we are now.
Yes, I agree with everything that's said. I think, Tom, the course of action that staff is taking, we draw up a timeline and we're just going to have to plug in as we move forward. I think as we look at some of the other side of the house, the security side, on the changes we've made, some of the things we're going to look at on that side, and we track how that is functioning from a budgetary standpoint. But at the end of the day, John, you're absolutely right. It's a budget, and the folks are going to decide, the voters, how we distribute those revenues. We just need to have a game plan. This, and Tom, I think you said it best, we're getting a lot of requests to do a lot of things for a lot of people that own undeveloped property, developed property that is just taking an inordinate amount of staff time in the finance department. And we might have to reevaluate how quickly we're able to get customer service items done from that standpoint. So I think for this particular issue, John, I'm feeling comfortable. Staff understands where we have to go, that this is definitely not a sprint. This is going to be a multi-fiscal year process, but we've got at least a walking path, if you will, on how it's going to proceed. Now we just have to start filling in some of those timelines.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing I think will be, sooner rather than later, I think we'll be at least historically, or in a position historically, to present some of the data that we've found to this point. I mean, I've been pretty involved in this with Tom and the staff. We have beat the Excel spreadsheet to death on this stuff. I mean, we are learning a lot as we go along, and I think it's going to really help us fully understand what the problem is and how we got to where we are. And I think, Tom, at some point, maybe a month or so down the road, we could maybe put up some of what we've been doing, so people can really appreciate the problem, and then we can step off and start to try and fix it.
That's a good point. I agree.
Yeah, I think so. You know, again, this is going to tie into the communications committee on how we're updating folks on some of the projects and programs we have working. So I think this is just one of those that's going to plug into that, that once we're able to get, you know, as accurate data as we can, we start supplying it to the community. And again, we're just chunking along on our timeline until we get to that point where we need the formal presentation process for the board and for the community.
Yeah, and there's one other part of this that's going to be helpful. My recollection is that we should have, and I don't know with COVID or whatever, but in traditional census activity, we get some preliminary figures relatively soon after the census is completed. You don't get the drill down detail for quite a while. But part of what we need to consider from the non-financial side is taking a look demographically at where we are now versus where we are when we cut these two measures and put them on the ballot last time. Even if the percentage, for example, of kids under 18 hasn't changed, if we're still running the 21, 22, 23% avenue, we have so many more people, and that just automatically nets the fact, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with it, that we have so many more kids. I mean, we're not the same community that we were when security was started, midway when we did J&K, and then now. Because number one, there's just a whole lot more houses here and a whole lot more kids. And essentially we were, you know, back when I got here in the mid 1980s, we were a golf course community. And I think now we're more a community with a golf course. And I think there's a distinct difference between the two. And I think that needs to be in this conversation somewhere down the line.
I would agree with that.
Well, and this is Tom, and on a day-to-day basis, the demand for more and more security services comes from individuals throughout the community. A lot of the people we talk to are, well, we'd rather have two patrolmen on duty at all times instead of the one. I mean, there's so many pieces to the puzzle here as to what people want and what they expect. And as John spoke of earlier, there's been surveys done, and it covers the whole gamut of people want to spend less money, but they want more service. People are willing to pay more money for more services. So maybe at the end of the day, in a couple of years, a referendum is how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was distressed the last time we went through the security analysis because it was technology intensive, and I appreciate that. I'm not knocking on that. But it didn't, in my mind, really address what I think the community view of security is. I think there's a varying opinion of how much of it there should be. But a lot of that emphasis has always been on patrol. I mean, gates are gates. Interestingly, the last piece of data that we accumulated was really interesting is I plugged in with Tom a bunch of numbers on staffing that we pulled out of really old reports that the chief gives every year. And essentially we haven't really, the gate staffing is exactly what it was in those days. And the patrol is not that far off. So while we've grown to this, you know, this level that we are now, we essentially haven't added a lot of people. I mean, we're still pretty much doing what we were doing staff-wise back in 1998. So have we beat that one to death?
Well, the last thing, John, this is Tom again. The last thing I want to say is, it is very clear that, you know, the past couple years, we supplemented security with property taxes, but we also supplemented salary as well as reserves. And after we got the cost allocation plan, which we needed, we're not putting any money in reserves for security this year. We're just trying to get by. And we're trying to be as frugal as we can with staffing, yet meeting the demands of the community. But at some point in time, the reserves have to get back. They have to be back on the forefront. Ideally, in a community like this, the property taxes would, in large part, go towards reserves because of the cost of replacing sewer pipes and sewer plants and water treatment plants, stuff like that, is all really expensive, and it takes time and years to generate reserves. Otherwise, when something really goes bad, you have to go out and get another bond. So
yeah,
we have to focus on getting reserves back on the front page.
Yeah, interestingly, what we found as from 98 up until about 2010, one of the things we talked about that took it off the rails was the fact that we suppressed really the actual admin costs in that 20 to 21% level. But the other thing we didn't do in 98 going forward and until they decided in 2011, and we picked this up off of some of the discussions that we listened to, is there weren't any reserves. I mean, it was like a wake up call in like 2010, 2011. Oh, maybe we ought to be reserving for those Ford Explorers, which is what they were using in those days. And so, you know, what magnifies this disparity that caused us to start dumping this property tax money in is really the fact that at some point, Ed Krause or the board or both initiated that reserve program, and to the point where we even barred against it to restaff the new North Gate. But there's also the issue that because our staffing has remained so consistent through this period of growth, that we never have the ability to catch up with the 2% unless we start throwing this technology at it. And some of the costs that we had over the last 3, 4, 5 years have been technology costs. Because without those technology enhancements that we pay for, you wouldn't be putting all these people through those gates. And I wonder even down the road, if we ever had that 800 unit development that ultimately we're supposed to get here, even now, how are you going to funnel them through the gates? I mean, we get lines right now. What would you do if you get another 2,000 cars on a daily basis? So there's a lot to this. Next item.
Public comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd just like to encourage you to look at the history of security here and going back to day one. I'm hearing some basic misconceptions about, you know, how CSD got security. I mean, CSD did not take the initiative on this. From day one, security was an RMA function. And RMA wanted it taken over by CSD because they could not collect money from the developers to pay for security. By turning it over to CSD, could be put on the tax rolls. And getting into the details, but I think it's important to put things into perspective and why CSD is in charge of security. And when you get right down to it, maybe the best thing is to turn it back over to RMA. And they won't be subject to Proposition 218. They can raise the rates, whatever they want to. And over here in Murrieta Village, we can hire a security guard and we'll be ending up paying a lot less. So I'm saying that going back to day one and looking at the history and documenting that, I think is important. And I think other things are important are to specifically identify what your purpose is. What are you trying to do? And identifying if there's a problem, what is the problem? And what is the problem that you're trying to solve? And hopefully everybody will be on the same page. End of comment.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm probably somewhat valuable in this respect in that I was here when all that happened. And you're right about your assessment on why the transfer was made. And it was a serious problem at the time because it wasn't the developer that we have now. It was the other developer, and he was not interested in paying any money. And there's been a lot that's gone on since then. But that part of it is what it is. The second part is, you know, we've started to look, you know, at other potential models, similar to what you're suggesting, and the possibility of who can do what and who can enforce what in what way. Is patrol different than other security functions? All of that stuff can be on the table, but ultimately I think what's important here is we do the best job we can in finding out what it is the community as a whole really wants. And number two, finding out to the best of our ability how much the community wants to pay for it. If we can do a good job in those two areas, maybe we can put a package together that we can get approved in a referendum. And we can satisfy in the middle, at least, the status quo. Because like I said before, you're going to ask 10 people from now until eternity what they want, and you're going to get 10 different answers. So somewhere in the middle here is where I think we have to be.
This is Linda Butler. Am I being heard?
I hear you.
Okay. Speaking as a resident, one other comment that I would like to make, and that is that all of us as residents have an obligation to live by the rules. Some of the security issues that we have in here really don't need to exist, and we shouldn't be paying, or we shouldn't have to be paying for some of these things, because it's a somewhat small group of people who think it's interesting or fun or just plain disrespectful to cut buoy lines on the lakes, or to not go by the speed limit, or to just generally not play by the rules. And so I'm always interested in and wonder about how, as a community, the people in the community can respond to rules, regulations, et cetera, in a way that doesn't create more and more and more need for patrol and what our security department does.
Okay.
That's it.
John, can I just want to say one more thing in response to Richard's comment. This is Tom Henning, about what does security do. It's in the pipeline. It's in the back page of the pipeline this month, is what is security's role within the community? And it goes line by line. This has been published in the past. And I just wanted, because of the talk about security these days, actually it was Amelia's idea, to repost something that's been posted before. It's on our website, but it's in the pipeline this month. So if you're interested in knowing what security does, it's right there.
And the overriding part of that is that if you go back and you read Jay, you read the referendum, it gets rather specific on what security is supposed to be doing. I mean, it's in there.
Tom, was that a response to me?
No.
Yeah.
maybe from Tom it was, but not from me. No.
Yeah. Well, I think you misunderstand what I was saying. I'm talking about you guys identifying the problem that you're dealing with, and what you're trying to do. I even understand what security does, but what are you guys trying to solve? What problem are you guys trying to solve as far as the budget is concerned?
Well, I think ideally we're trying to make it a self-sustaining entity so that we're not plopping property tax allocation money into to prop it up. And that's from my standpoint. I think that, and you know, I think you've even made this point, Richard, that and we understand it, and I agree with it, that money is better served in water, sewer, drainage. We have an independent contract for garbage. I think it's pretty self-sustaining. If this is self-sustaining, there's a nice healthy amount of money there that could much better be put towards reserving, which you know, I think a lot of us also agree is underfunded.
And this is, thank you. I have another comment from Dee. Can we hear you?
No. Tell her to check
that. There is more than 66% behind the gate versus outside the gate, says Diana Weaver.
I'm sorry, say that again, Amelia.
There is an issue that there is more than 66% behind the gate versus outside the gate, was her comment.
Well, you'll need to see that breakdown in the numbers that we're going through, and we're also going through the property tax allocation numbers to see, you know, where that actual contribution comes from. When we get all that data together, we'll put it out there so everybody can see it. We moving on?
We do not have anybody else in chatting, and there's nobody else with their hands raised.
Okay, let's go to item 5, tax roll placement of delinquent utility accounts.
Yes, this is my item. Thank you, Michelle, for putting the work together. Every year we take bills that are not paid at the end of the fiscal year, and we put them on the county tax roll. And so we're asking you to adopt or to take forward the resolution for placing delinquent security and drainage taxes on undeveloped property to this county tax roll. Basically, this is $77,000 in unpaid security and drainage fees. And if you go further down, I'm not actually looking at the Zoom meeting anymore. If you go further down, it shows the resolution that we're looking to have brought forward. And then you have a list of the properties that are currently have unpaid bills for last fiscal year. The process is we post this in the newspaper two times. So it's posted this week. It'll post next week. It'll get approved by the board on the 19th. And then the county will work with the county assessor. And when the people get their tax bills in, I think they get them in November or sooner than that, they'll see these charges and hopefully they'll pay their taxes on that bill. And if they don't, the following year, the county will pay the debt to the district and then take the debt on themselves and collect through the TEETER program.
Well, it's kind of a no-brainer here. So all we need to do, Tom, is you need Tim and I to recommend that we forward this to the board, correct?
That's correct. But I did want to make a comment about the accounts for the residences, not the undeveloped properties, that are becoming in arrears in part because of the COVID.
Right.
So we do have a number of accounts. We talked about it at the last board meeting for homes with water meters that are falling behind on their bills. It was decided by the board last year at the recommendation of the Poon Group to no longer place residences where there's an active water meter onto the tax roll and to collect the money directly through our collection process, through our normal collection process. The reason is because, as you can see, the $77,000 that we're putting on the tax roll today might not get to us for another year and a half. So in order to manage our monies, we decided it was recommended that we no longer place residential properties onto the tax roll for unpaid bills. And we are currently working individually with the higher balances to create pay agreements and so on and so forth. So that's what we're up to. That's just an update on that.
Yeah, Tom, do you have something we can use for relevance on how many delinquencies, residential delinquencies we have and what that total dollar number is? Something we can start to track?
We are tracking it. I did say something at the board meeting last month. Do you remember what the number was, Millie, off the top of your head? I think it's like $40,000 and about maybe 60 customers. Let me ask Tanya. I'll get you an answer, John.
I thought, I don't know what sticks in my head. It was in the 100 range or something, but maybe I hope I'm high.
But we are reporting it at the board meeting. We're calling it out.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an important number. I mean, you know, I think the economy and the impacts of this are really just getting started. I think there's more to come. And you know, if hypothetically, if once you get to 100 or then you get to 200, you're starting to talk 5, 6, 7, 8%, you know. So it's definitely something I'd really, you know, as I think the board really needs to understand on a month by month basis.
Yeah, we started doing that last month, John.
Yeah.
So we will continue.
Okay. We don't need any more with this other than a recommendation from Tim and I to move it forward, correct?
Correct.
You okay with that, Tim?
All in.
Okay.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
I just want to understand this a little bit. So these amounts that add up to $77,000, that's the amounts that are currently overdue. Is that correct?
As of June 30th, yes.
Okay. And once you go through this process, if they don't pay them, like in about a year, you'll get the money from the company. Is that correct?
About a year and probably 3 or 4 months.
Okay. Just want to confirm my understanding. Okay, thank you.
And if you look at the names on Tom's list, getting that money would be the equivalent of getting blood out of a rock.
Okay.
First of all, if you could find some of those people, you should let us know. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on.
Okay, the next item is I'm going to let Amelia present it because she's our running point on all these issues with the COVID.
So we decided that it was time to give the committee an idea about how much COVID has cost the district so far. And as of July 31st, the total cost to the district is $31,518.57. You can see that is broken down into project time. So this is extra time that we had to spend working through, going to webinars, figuring out what to do, rewriting IIPPs, et cetera, et cetera, figuring out how to set up Zoom meetings and doing all that. That's time that we spent on projects. Sick time was $6,054.76, which accounts for 27 sick days with employees that they've had to take off either for themselves or their families to help get better. $15,000 is for supplies, and that includes two surface books, monitors, lots of cords and cables to get us all set up to work remotely. And then about $2,906 for lab tests so far.
And the lab testing was the COVID testing on employees who were working around either of our two employees who tested positive. And as of today, no other employees have tested positive.
Okay, well.
Wait.
Go ahead.
This is Linda. I just had a couple questions. The cost so far has related to, not related to people not paying their bills. That's just the administrative cost?
Yeah, that's just the cost to the district.
Okay. And then out of that 70... Hello? Out of that $77,000 that we were talking about a minute ago, is any of that people who have made plans with the district? Have we made... Have any of our residents made plans so they're just not paying the bill?
Well, the $77,000, Linda, this is Tom, is undeveloped property security and drainage fees that were unpaid as of June 30th. And the residents' unpaid bills include security, solid waste, and sewer as well. Water, security, solid waste, and sewer. And so far, I think we had one pay agreement and they caught up with their bill. But we're offering pay agreements. But with the fact of the matter is that the district cannot shut off water or charge interest or penalties for unpaid bills, we're just going to have to kind of wait it out. But I think eventually people will catch up with their bills sooner than what we would get from the property taxes.
Yeah. Okay. I'll reserve my other questions on that.
Okay, Amelia, move us up. We're up to item 7, director and staff comments and suggestions. I have no comments at this point. Tim?
No, I'm good. I think staff is getting a firm grip on what we want on the finance side of security. And right now the staff in the finance, just a whole lot of stuff going on. So as a director, definitely appreciate all the efforts that are being undertaken. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that. I have spent an a lot of time with those folks in the last month, and the response and the quality of work has really been outstanding. So I would hope, Tom, you could pass that along.
I will do that. Thank you very much. I have nothing further.
Any other staff out there that have a comment? Anybody else?
This is Amelia. I have one other comment from Diana Weaver. Thanks to the staff for their hard work and the direction they are taking, getting these issues with finances and how to move forward. Thank you, Dee.
Okay, if we are through with our item 8, which is thanks, everybody. We'll see you at the board meeting, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.